Welcome to the Lindsay Hadley Podcast Show. I'm coming to you from the North Shore of Oahu, where weekly I interview some of the world's most inspiring people from business, philanthropy, and entertainment. I love collecting humans, and these are some of my favorites I've found along the way. This podcast is brought to us by Capita Financial Network.
Do you need help with the next steps of your financial plan? Think Capita. Capita is a financial network built around you. They have a team of financial advisors, CPAs, estate attorneys, Medicare providers, and Social Security experts to help you accomplish your financial goals. Call or schedule a complimentary consultation at 801-566-5058 or visit their website at capitafinancialnetwork.com. You can also check out their financial education podcast, The Financial Call, available on Apple, Google, Spotify, and YouTube.
Welcome to the Lindsay Hadley Podcast Show. Today we have on a special guest, Mike Seckler. Mike is going to be speaking to us today all about small business. And he's personally an entrepreneur who's had two very successful exits and is now built a company that's providing these unique services. So Mike, thank you for coming on the show. I'm so thrilled to have you.
Yeah, thanks, Lindsay, for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Just feel free to just go ahead and answer, you know, share whatever you'd like to about your entrepreneur story.
Yeah, so I was an entrepreneur at a very young age, soon after graduating from college. I graduated at a really interesting time in 1994 when in college we were using the internet and email and things like that, but those things weren't widely used in companies yet. And so graduating, understanding those things was a little bit like a superpower. And my co-founder and I, we started a company that became the first SaaS-based HR technology company, in part because we got our first jobs and everything about becoming a new employee was stunningly manual and redundant. And we thought we could build an application that would make that better. And there was a lot of naivete in that assumption, but we figured things out and built a really successful company over 10 years. We got going during the dot-com boom and learned some important lessons there about raising money and evangelism. And then we had to survive the dot-com bust and had to learn how to run a business and generate our own oxygen, you know, through generating cash. But we did those things and then sold that company to ADP, where in 2006, where it became the core of what's now known there as Workforce Now, which is, I think, the largest part of that Fortune 100 company.
So, Mike, how exciting that you were the first SaaS company ever in internet history for HR. Like, when you first began this process, did people see the value immediately, or was there hesitance? I mean, because sometimes being a pioneer as an entrepreneur, you get just all the skeptics, right? Because you're trying something that's never been done before. Like, what was that experience like being received?
Yeah, I mean, it was mixed. I mean, from an investor standpoint, we had some really forward-thinking investors that bought into what we were doing. We were actually the first venture investment from someone who's quite famous now named Bill Gurley, who went on to fund companies like Uber and OpenTable and others. So investors began to get the story, but for sure, there was a real effort to educate the market. A lot of businesses didn't have internet. A lot of businesses, IT departments were reluctant to have applications hosted outside the four walls of their companies. And so we were part of that first wave of educating the market that by building applications from the ground up for the internet in a way that is multi-tenant, so multiple companies could be supported on a shared infrastructure, that could actually enable us, in that case, to democratize access to smaller businesses to make world-class application functionality available.
It's amazing. And you finally had every entrepreneur's dream, which is an exit you were acquired. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience and what that was like and how that went?
Yeah, well, I'll comment on two ways, because I wouldn't, you say it's everyone's dream. It was the right answer for us. We're acquired by the largest company in our space, and it became the foundation of their growth story for the past 20 years. So I'm proud of that. I will say, though, that to start at a business that had contemporaries, you know, with companies like Salesforce.com and others, definitely spent a lot of time reflecting on what kinds of decisions would we have had to have made better to have earned the right to go the distance as an independent company. And so while selling that business was a good outcome and everyone made money and the business lived on, which I'm proud of within ADP, definitely left me wondering what it would take to be part of a company that could become a category defining company, you know, have a enduring life as a public company and change the world. And that's a lot of what motivates me now at JustWorks.
Okay, so excited. This is a great segue into talk about Just Works. Can you share with our audience, how did you end up there? And tell us all about what you guys have done and are doing. And it's really exciting for us to learn more about this next phase.
Yeah, thank you. Well, first, a little bit, Just Works, we help small businesses grow with confidence by helping them with everything that they need to have a workforce, right? You went off, you have your own company, you have 15 employees, you feel really good about yourself. You might want to spend all your time like interviewing guests and getting advertisers for your podcast, but you find that you have to spend a lot of time with all the things that are involved in having those 15 employees. And so we exist to help small businesses with that aspect of their business so they can focus on what really matters in their companies and how they're going to grow. And we do that today for 11,000 small businesses. We are a mission-driven company. We take this, what we do, super seriously because we see small businesses out there doing the hardest, most important, most honorable work. As these folks go out, they try to defy the odds to pursue their dreams and create their companies out of thin air and then create jobs for people out of thin air. That is like the most extraordinary thing. But small businesses have not historically had great partners. And, from a provider standpoint, right, small businesses, they're expensive to sell to. You don't make much money on anyone's small business. And so small businesses don't get a lot of attention and love, and JustWorks exists to change that.
Oh, that's so great. So 11,000 small businesses, how did you start to acquire them? What was your methodology it's hard to reach that market, I would think, I'm imagining, or how did you guys what's your marketing strategy?
Well, the company began in New York City and began by, serving some companies in the technology community and creating raving fan customers who then told their entrepreneur friends, and it built from there. But we're now, we've grown up, we're live in all 50 states. We're also live now in 12 countries and growing that footprint as well. One of the fascinating things, as we've grown is that 10 years ago, small businesses in the U.S., like international support for international employees wasn't necessarily at the top of the list. And that's been changing over time. But now with post-pandemic, as many companies have gone hybrid or remote, you have small businesses with people not only in many states, which is, by the way, a huge compliance burden, something that JustWorks helps with, but you also see more and more frequently small businesses with contractors and employees in other countries. And so we're helping small businesses with that now as well.
Okay, so Mike, how do you define a small business? Because, is that based on revenue or the size of their staff? Because you're providing these different services and the utility. How do you guys view it?
Yeah, the simplest way that we look at it is there's 40 million people working at companies with less than 100 employees in the United States alone, and that's where we're focused. And some of our customers definitely grow well beyond that. And then many of them increasingly have employees outside the U.S. But really, when we're acquiring customers, we're generally thinking at companies under 100 employees and as few as one or two employees.
Okay, amazing. So I've been a small business owner my entire career. I had a boutique consultancy and would also have like 1099 contractors. That's also really common, I think, in the small business world. It's like you don't take on W-2 employees as easily. Does the utility of what you're offering offer the value for all of those services, like for people that are also like 1099 or using vendors for their business solutions?
Yeah, absolutely. Like our whole thing is about being there for the small business's whole life cycle and journey and giving them the power to choose where and how to manage their workforce in the way that suits them. So imagine the use case of an entrepreneur who gets going, is moonlighting in their current job, is trying to build something, a proof of concept, and they're doing that with contractors in Argentina. And then they get rolling and they're able to maybe raise some seed funding and they hire their first W-2 employees in the United States, but they may not be ready for health insurance. But then as they grow and they want to compete for talent against larger companies, they want to add a full benefits program. And then as their employees grow further, they're in multiple states and they need to navigate multi-state compliance. So we're there to help entrepreneurs at each stage in their journey. And as they hit each of those inflection points, they don't have to think too much about how to access that. It's just available within JustWorks in a very, very kind of easy to access way.
That's wonderful. You mentioned it's a mission-driven company. And when you think about the core values or the things you hope, you made a company that like has gone on to live. And like you said, you're proud of that. What is it that you hope, on your epitaph, what is it you hope about this company that it'll accomplish the most in terms of the values and the outcomes of the legacy piece of your life?
Yeah, that's, I really appreciate that question. I mean, first and foremost, we want to change the game for small businesses by being the partner that they've always deserved, but never before had access to. And we think that's really important work. As I mentioned earlier, we think what they're doing is important and honorable. They haven't historically had all the help they need. We want to change that. Our vision of the world that relates to this, the way we want to leave the world a better place, is we want to make starting, running, and joining a small business a more accessible option for all. And in that statement, that explicitly acknowledges that access to capital, mentorship, resources has not been evenly distributed in our society. We'd like to change that. As it relates to the company, you know, I mentioned this before, I've been an entrepreneur, built it for 10 years, sold it for a successful exit, and that's great in some ways. But I'd like to be part of a team that builds an enduring, independent public company that kind of really changes the world in a number of ways, one of which is for small businesses. And then the third one I want to talk about, that would be for the company. And then for our employees, I want to create an environment where people can fully realize their potential, like during their time here, that they've grown more as individuals and professionals than they could have in any other professional environment. So much so that 10 years from now in the New York City tech ecosystem, when the next batch of startups is hitting these inflection points, they're like, oh my gosh, this is so hard. Where do I find people that know how to navigate these things? That they look for ex-Just Workers because they know our reputation. They know that, you know, leaders that grew up here like encountered these things and were successful. And so that would be a great legacy for us to leave.
That's amazing, Mike. When you're looking at taking this company public, you've had now two exits, is that right? From businesses you founded?
The first business I founded is named Employees, and we sold that to ADP. The second company, Euclidean, continues as an independent company. It's an investment management firm that uses artificial intelligence and machine learning to invest in the public markets.
Wow. So that's really fascinating. Can you tell me a little bit about that? So you, in every instance, I mean, that seems like a big transition from HR, SaaS. I mean, there's still tech. I see that. And financial services. And now this is, you know, I guess almost like a holistic version of some of what you've built, it sounds like.
Well, I would say the Euclidean, you know, venture. So I had the same co-founder for 23 years, incredible individual. And he was the kind of beautiful mind, computer science, math genius behind both businesses. So he would build the products and I would try to build the business around what he could construct. After 12 years of that first venture, John was very interested in you know, artificial intelligence, which has become quite hot nowadays, but back in 2008, it was still early, and how to use those tools to look at the vast corpus of information on companies and come up with systematic methods of evaluating what might make for a good investment and what companies you might want to avoid from an investment perspective. And we built that business and it continues and it's quite successful. For me, the one thing that happened though over time is I realized though, for me personally, what I missed was the challenges that come from being on a team in a operating environment, trying to accomplish very difficult things and then, you know, winning together. And that aspect of teamwork and leadership is harder to do in an investment boutique, even a tech-driven one. And so I was scratching that itch by sitting on some boards, one of which was Just Works. I met the founder of Just Works in 2014 because he was building a business that had some things in common with my first company. And we hit it off. He invited me to be the company's first independent board member. I met him when the company had 20 employees. It was on the board for 4.5 years. And then when he hit some growth points where he wanted help, I was eager to be back in this kind of game. And so I essentially went full-time at Euclidean and on the board of Just Works and flipped that to being kind of a, you know, an advisor, a part owner of Euclidean to being full-time at Just Works. And that was 4.5 years ago.
So Mike, is this your first venture without John?
Yeah, it was really, it was beautiful and emotional and a difficult conversation for me to have with him. But he was, you know, when I thought about this was the right thing for me, but we managed it really well together. We still talk weekly. Your best men at each other's weddings. It's a very important relationship. But he loves Euclidean. He loves being hands on keyboard and working through kind of, you know, that investment team and that data necessary to drive those kinds of decisions. And I wanted to lead at scale. And we were able to make that transition successfully.
That's such a sweet, like, love story in business. Like, I'm so impressed and touched, because, you know, I think the hardest part about entrepreneurship is really that it's a high contact sport relationally. I mean, there's just a lot of carnage. There's a lot of sharp elbows. There's misunderstandings, failure. Human beings tend to, even with the very most earnest hearts, you know, they just tend to disappoint, have misunderstandings. Also, people grow and shift and change. And it's hard to maintain that level of loyalty and that level of equanimity that you have with a partner for that many years. You said 28 years?
23 years, I believe. 1996 to 2000, no, 1996 to whatever. Yeah, 2019. Yeah.
Oh, precious. I just love it. I'm obsessed with that story. And then, so when you said that conversation, you were like, hey, I have this other thing I want to do. I bet it was painful. I can only relate because I had a business partner for 10 years in my boutique agency. She started out actually as like a volunteer kind of intern, and then was my first hire. And then over 10 years became a partner in my business. And she was, we recently went our separate ways about a year ago. And same thing, we're still best friends and, you know, we love each other so much, but there's just this very emotional thing, because there's almost like a safety blanket and you know each other's quirks. But I found, and I'd love to know if this is true for you, Mike, because these interpersonal stories, there's so many people listening who have had deeply intimate relationships with the people they do business with, their co-founders, their investors, their board members, you know, people, sometimes it's spouses people build their businesses with. But in this case, with this girl that had been like my ride or die in business, it's painful to be like, you know, I want her to do nothing but succeed. But then you also are like, there's kind of this guilt or comparison because you're on your own. And there's, you know, like in both of our instances, we really chose brand new things. I mean, it sounds like John's staying in something you've built and continuing to triple down on that. But I, you know, I've really found that like, we've been rooting for each other. It's very genuine, very earnest. But there is this kind of like, can I succeed without you? Was the magic, you know, were you the shiny ticket? And I think we both have that emotionally. We've talked about it. Did you have any of that when you first launched out? Was like, oh man, is that part of it? Or did you feel, I guess, you know, some confidence?
Oh yeah. I mean, there's so many things about this conversation that are interesting. I mean, well, first of all, you know, John and I had these distinct roles, and, you know, I kind of wanted in my heart to build another software company, that we need a big team, and John loved Euclidean. And I was like stuck. I was like, whoa, we've been tied at the hip for 20 years. And, you know, I can't imagine doing anything without John as my co-founder, but I also had a hard time imagining working in someone else's company. But the thing that was interesting about Just Works was I got to know Isaac Goetz, the founder. He hung out for 6 months, then he invited me to be on the board. I was on the board for 4.5 years. And then when he needed help, it was interesting because I knew the business. I helped build the board. I had this 5-year relationship then with the founder. And if I didn't lean into that moment, it was basically saying for sure I would never work in anyone else's company because it would never be teed up like that again. I mean, it was just so unique. And that conversation with Isaac, you talk about these business relationships having like a, you know, I remember the phone call. He's like, company was getting, you know, about $75 million of revenue, 500 employees. It was getting bigger. And, you know, this is four or five years ago. And he said, Mike, I think I need help. I think I need someone to help run the business. And, you know, it was like two friends that are thinking about dating, but neither one knows how to say it. I was like, well, listen, Isaac, as your lead director, I'm going to help you find the best person. But if you think it might be me, we could talk about it. But if that's awkward, you know, it was one of those things. And I'm really glad that we did it. And when I talked to John, which was nerve-wracking to like make that phone call, first thing he said is like, hey, I know that you need this. I mean, the beautiful thing for him to say, he was also like, but I'm a little bit scared because all the people around Euclidean kind of bought into us as a team. And so we crafted a plan to work on that together, and we're successful getting people comfortable and then hiring people around John so people would believe. But you know, this point, For the listeners, I would just, one observation I've had is that folks who start these businesses, these early relationships, whether it's with your first investor or the co-founder, early employees, even early customers, like getting those right, like it can be like business marriages. Like it's like any marriage, if it's a great fit, it can be really enriching. But if it's a bad marriage, it can be like nothing else matters, right? And so getting these co-founder, early investor, early customer, early employee relationships right is so important. And a lot of folks don't put enough thought into it. And then they result in these self-inflicted wounds that for the company's whole lifetime suck some amount of energy out of the enterprise and limit its ability to really be great.
Wow.
So I think it's an important topic.
Really important topic. So Mike, you've been on several boards, and I'm sure you're an investor as well. I mean, you're investing with your software company in the public markets, but have you invested in like private equity or venture or individual angel? Have you done anything like that?
Yeah. You know, I've done, most of my public market investing is with Euclidean. And then I have done angel investing. I've found that when I've been an angel in businesses I don't know much about, it hasn't been very lucrative. But where it has been successful is when I've invested as an angel, but then also gotten somewhat involved. Like I did that with JustWorks a long time ago. I did that with a company named ShopKeep, which we ultimately sold to a public company, Lightspeed. And so when I've put my money in an area where I know something about and also been somewhat involved, it's been very fruitful.
That's amazing. That's awesome. Yeah. And I ask that because, you know, do you have advice for, you just mentioned how, you know, the wrong partnerships in business with the human capital being mismatched is just disastrous and painful and takes all this energy. What advice do you have, having watched and having been a part of different structures and different companies? Kind of what are some core things to look out for? Like somebody's considering a new venture, a new partnership, you know, bringing on someone and actually going for it. What kinds of things can you give advice for to maybe look out for or to work out before you take that leap and get married?
Yeah. Well, like I think there's like there's a couple of things to say. And I think the most fundamental level is just on the venture itself. You know, these things are so hard as you've experienced. And so setting yourself up so that you have a chance to overcome the odds and be successful is worth thinking hard about. And the most fundamental thing is, what are you going to devote your time to? A lot of these adventures, you know, can be 10 years long. So are you picking an area that you love enough, that is true enough to you, where when things get hard, you're going to stick it out? You know, there's a lot of famous quotes about this, right? Steve Jobs, you know, before he passed, said that he was increasingly convinced that more than half of what separated successful and unsuccessful entrepreneurs was just pure perseverance. You know, and Elon Musk says building these companies is like chewing glass. And so both those things resonate with me. And I just think the most fundamental thing is picking something that's authentic to you, that you know something about, that you're going to commit to for a long time. Then who do you surround yourself with? We talked about the importance of the co-founder relationship. If you have one, early investors, even early customers. I mean, early customer that kind of buys into you but doesn't really want to share your vision, and then they pull you astray through their product requests, that can be disastrous, right? So finding early customers that are willing to like really, you know, that want what you want to build is key. And yeah, so much more to say about this, but yeah.
Mike, these are great answers. You're pretty magic. So tell me about when you had the first exit, did you set aside like money where you're like, okay, I want to be able to never work again? Was it a big enough exit to do that? I mean, the fact that you're back in the saddle and then now you're, you know, I mean, a lot of people, I mean, you obviously have a ton of vitality and a ton of talent to use, and it obviously feeds you. But did you determine like hey, I'm going to go on hiatus, I'm going to go golf for a few years, or, you know, how did you determine to keep going? Was it based on, oh, I didn't quite get enough liquidity to be completely, you know, in that position financially? But a lot of guys talk about the second Everest or like, you know, jumping back in and the dynamic of, you know, kind of taking on a new venture. Any thoughts about that and what it was like for you?
Yeah. Wow. Well, I definitely dreamt of, while I was building that first company, that if we ever sold it, I was going to go learn how to like ski or do something like that. But my first daughter, so we sold that company in October of 06. My first daughter was born on November 2nd of 06. And my wife had a really big career. And so it was pretty obvious to me that not working at a time was not going to be like learning how to ski. And at the same time, ADP, I was concerned for our people, and ADP wanted me to run it. And so I had no earnout. There was no financial reason to stay, but I was given the opportunity to run our business as well as some other parts of ADP, and they formed a new unit. And basically the unit was, we had a partnership going with ADP where they had some people implementing our tools for their own customers. So all those people came in with our company. And then they had some legacy at what's called client server HR benefit software. They gave us that team to begin migrating all those customers onto our platform. And it was really an exhilarating couple years of putting these teams together. They all kind of feared each other and all didn't think they had much to learn from each other to build one highly cohesive team that was really successful. And then that team went on, as I mentioned, to form the core of what's now known as Workforce Now, which is the largest part of ADP, this $100 billion company. People we hired out of college are running huge parts of ADP now. So I feel a lot of pride that we created something that had the foundation to last. But yeah, like, you know, I sold the business. I had a bunch of entrepreneur friends and I sold the business and I went out and bought myself a new car and they were all depressed that it was like a Toyota Highlander. And I was like, I don't know, man. I got a lot of things I want to invest money in, not, you know, so maybe it was just some conservative conservatism. I'm not sure.
Those are some great indicators. You know, I can honestly say it. I'm embarrassed that I'm not somebody that has that kind of discipline. I'm like, oh, shiny new thing. You know, money just comes in and then it goes out. So, but people that are like you, I feel like they're the best people invested in business and life because they're just highly, they're playing this game of conserving and growing wealth. I mean, they just think differently. So I feel like every person I ever know that became like ultra wealthy is the kind of person that would buy a Toyota after a big exit. So I love that, Mike. So tell me a little bit about in terms of like the giving back component of your life. Have you ever, you know, with any of these business built any kind of corporate social responsibility or, you know, philanthropic side or foundational side to these businesses and or personally? A lot of our listeners that we work with, you know, are philanthropists, and they set aside, you know, after liquidities or experiences or whatever, money to be able to give back. Is that something that's a part of your purview or you're passionate about at all?
Yeah. Well, I mean, first, let's talk about Just Works. I mean, Just Works, as I mentioned, is a very mission-driven company. We've taken the 1% pledge, so 1% of equity, 1% of company's profits, 1% of people's time devoted to our mission of helping small businesses grow with confidence and our vision of a world where, you know, starting, running, and joining a small business becomes a more accessible option for all. We have a variety of programs, our Spring Forward Fund, our Just Thrive program, which are geared to support entrepreneurs in under-resourced areas and to help small businesses in general and to advocate on their behalf. You know, prior to Just Works at Euclidean, we actually built a fund named the Euclidean Fund for Cancer Research, where a substantial majority of the fee income from that fund would be devoted to charities supporting cancer research. And that remains part of Euclidean's kind of, you know, proposition today. And that felt really good. I mean, you know, many of us, I certainly have, and I'm sure many of your listeners have had family members impacted by cancer. And when you're building an investment management company that, you know, isn't a biotech firm, it's unclear how to connect those things. But it was really neat to create this fund and say, hey, listen, we've done well enough that we're going to take the proceeds from this and plow it into a cause that we care a lot about.
That's so wonderful. How incredible is that? How do you guys pick these nonprofits that are your beneficiaries from the fund?
We really focus on the Cancer Research Institute here in New York. I know the number of the board members there, and this is a research institution that funded all the early investigations into immunotherapy. Immunotherapy, when that idea was considered like snake oil, the idea that you could harness the body's immune system to attack cancer. And they were part of the pioneering research that led to James Allison's Nobel Prize and many of the big advancements that have been really successful with things like, you know, melanomas, skin cancers, and a number of, you know, lung cancers have been, you know, really, you know, mortality has come down through some of these inventions, and there's so much work to be done there. So it feels like, you know, as I go through life, to the extent I accumulate resources, that will be an area I hopefully can support more materially over time.
Wow, Mike, thank you so much for doing that. And thanks to John and your board and investors and everybody who's a part of that initiative. What a gift to all of us as human beings. With regards to Just Works, you have these 11,000 small businesses. Do you know the data on them pretty significantly? Like, do you know, as you mentioned, there's some in lower socioeconomic. Do you understand if they're women-led? You know, how many of them are minorities and BIPOC? Like, do you actually have like a great snapshot of the nature?
Yeah, well, part of it is we have a Just Thrive program that is geared to providing additional support to women and minority-owned small businesses. And, you know, I think we have somewhere around 1,000 of our customers participating in that program today. So we do have good data on them. We have good data. We have real-time data on who's hiring, who's firing, who's hiring people in certain states, who's hiring people internationally, who's taking advantage of some of the government relief programs around COVID with PPP loans and employee retention tax credits. So we have real visibility into the state of small businesses that we serve, and it's pretty interesting. I can share some insights there.
I was just going to ask, what are some that stand out that people would be kind of maybe surprised or find fascinating? I love when the research just tells the story, because we don't have to make assumptions, you know?
So just understand that JustWorks began focused somewhat more on white-collar businesses, even though today we are rapidly expanding into new verticals. Within the white-collar population, that if you looked at an average company of 15 or 16 employees, pre-pandemic, they were in just over, on average, 2 states, their employees. Post-pandemic, they're in 4 to 5 states. So this whole move to remote and hybrid work has been real. And this complexity of managing a distributed workforce is very much a small business opportunity and challenge, right? Something that JustWorks helps with. That's one big trend. The other thing that we've seen is that, you know, many white-collar businesses did really well in the first phase of the pandemic. Like when you didn't have to be face-to-face with someone to do business, those companies did well in the first phase of the pandemic. The ones that did poorly were the ones that required human contact, like retail, restaurants, travel, home health care. And what you see more recently is an inverse of that, where the companies that really shut down in the first phase of the pandemic is where much of the job growth has remained, whereas there has been somewhat of a white-collar recession since the summer of 22.
Wow. What do you think that is? Why is that, Mike? Like, what do you think?
I think a lot of them really hired aggressively during the pandemic. And then as interest rates started going up, and as some of the private capital markets got cooler, it led to certain businesses having a bit of a reckoning with their decisions over the prior years.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, they were over bullish, and then they found themselves. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
But it does seem like that's healing. And I've been through 2 of these cycles before with the dot-com bust and the financial crisis, and this one has some differences, but does feel like we've been going through a cycle, and see some signs that many of these businesses that have been very cautious with hiring over the last 2 years, you know, 18 months, 2 years, are now starting to get a little bit more bullish that they're going to be building their teams again.
Incredible. So when you're looking at, you know, trying to help these small business owners succeed and make it more accessible, outside of the utility of the actual technology and the actual product you've created, what are other ways you might be doing that maybe are more ancillary, not as obvious to the marketplace?
Yeah, I'm really glad you answered that question, and I've been remiss to not state this. So there aren't many good options for small business owners, and the options that exist tend to not deliver very high levels of service. And so one of the things that's distinctive about JustWorks is while we are a technology company, we surround everything we do with very, very accessible human hospitality. So, you know, our customers, they would prefer to do things on their own if they can. They don't necessarily want to talk to a human, but when you have a small business and you're going through your first termination in California, where there's all kinds of big risks and laws, you might want to talk to someone on the phone. Or if you have an employee and they just had their first child and that they're at the doctor's office and there's some question about their insurance, they might not want to go on a website to figure that out. They might want to just call someone and figure it out right now on the phone. And so JustWorks, we answer the phone in under 45 seconds, and we're there for people in those very critical moments to provide kind of a high level of care around the technology. And so that's really important. But, you know, of course, we do other things, you know, access to retirement, you know, 401k programs, HSA, FSA programs. We offer expense management solutions, time tracking solutions. Our customers get access to pretty interesting benefits like access to One Medical and, you know, free Peloton subscriptions. Like, you know, there's like fun things that we make available to our customers that are distinctly JustWorks that you don't necessarily see from some of the legacy providers.
That's so great, Mike. So kind of wrapping up here, I mean, what an amazing entrepreneurial journey you've had. And you mentioned your daughter being born. Do you have any other children, grandchildren by any chance?
Yeah, not yet. I got 3 daughters, 14, 16, and 17-year-old girls. So it's never dull in my life.
Yeah, they're still really young, because that's right. You said your first you mentioned when she was born. So you're in the thick of like teenage girls. So when you see like, do you see a trajectory for you? Hey, over the next 5 years and we're going to get JustWorks, because you mentioned it was at 75 million 4 years ago when you first kind of joined and he asked for help. Where are you guys today? What do you think your trajectory path is? What can you share about, you know, kind of anybody who's watching you guys from the sidelines that might want to throw in some, you know, resources or just pay attention to you as for where you guys might go when you go public?
We're about four times the size of, you know, when I came inside the business to help. We've generated cash in the last several years, and our core business does generate cash, and we're investing that cash this year to bring some new things to market, including those international capabilities I mentioned, as well as giving small businesses a level of optionality for how they access benefits that's never been available to the small business market before. So we're in an investment phase. But we've always run very capital efficiently. I mean, some of that was our founder's bias. Some of that was, you know, seared into my brain by surviving the dot-com bust. And so we're a company that has raised $143 million in our history and has a significant majority of that still in the bank. And but we want to create a lasting, enduring business. I hope at some point we would earn the right to be a public company, and we'd love to have very long-term minded investors, you know, involved with us when we earn the right to do that.
That's amazing. Okay. So for last little, like to end this with the last question, Mike, what do you hope your daughters know most about you? Maybe values, thoughts, you know, favorite quotes, something if you're like, okay, this is kind of my like, you know, an important thing I would want to leave with my daughters in the world and people that I love, you know, is something that you deeply value in terms of a belief, a way of being as you make your way in this precious life.
Well, I mean, I think more than anything, I hope they remember me as like a really, really caring father and, you know, husband to their mom and eventually grandfather to their kids more than anything. But beyond that, you know, it's interesting. I think they're really proud of what we're doing at JustWorks. And I think that them seeing me, you know, struggle and work hard to do something that is difficult but meaningful, that sometimes means I miss a family dinner, although I definitely try to make several of them every week, I think is a good thing. And I think that it gives them some joy and pride. And I just want them to feel that when they think about their dad.
That's amazing, Mike. Well, I'm super proud of you. Thank you for what you're doing for small businesses and for the economy and for people that are in the trenches, you know, providing all these amazing services to make. It's so difficult to be an entrepreneur, but it's so rewarding. And so having people for you like you guys are such a gift. So, Mike, thank you again for coming on the show. It was such a pleasure to meet you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you.
Do you need help with the next steps for your financial plan? Think Capita. Capita is a financial network built around you. They have a team of financial advisors, CPAs, estate attorneys, Medicare providers, and Social Security experts to help you accomplish your financial goals. Call to schedule a complimentary consultation at 801-566-5058 or visit their website at www.capitafinancialnetwork.com. You can also check out their financial education podcast, The Financial Call, available on Apple, Google, Spotify, and YouTube.